it's suddenly a tremendous relief to catch sight of Beatrice. She's standing in a pool of yellow light shining through the sooty glass roof, her grey eyes scanning the throng from behind new circular horn-rimmed spectacles, a slight frown breaking into a smile as she sees me a moment after I see her.
Annie! Whew, what a crush! I thought I'd missed you!
Her gloved hands catch mine for a moment, and then she grabs my suitcase and joins the queue, jostling for the barrier.
Goodness, girl, what on earth have you got in here?
I laugh and take her arm. She's wearing a white dress with blue roses and a little blue-grey bolero, smart grey shoes, grey-blue gloves that match her eyes, and a dove-grey leather bag.
Gosh, Beatrice, you look so elegant.
We're standing at one of the bus stops in front of the station. Beatrice smiles shyly and raises a critical hand to her hair, which has been cut in a bob, held at the back with a bow. I've barely seen her since she took up her job in London. People say she's not a beauty, though to me she's my beautiful sister. But there's no doubt about it. Beatrice has style. I feel a scruff in comparison with my plaid cotton dress, its starched white collar probably coated in smuts from the journey, my creased summer coat, sensible brogues and tangled hair from sitting on deck for most of the crossing. Beatrice surveys me, taking all this in, and says nothing. Later, after supper at her digs in Bloomsbury, I tell her a bit about France and my 10 months studying in Bordeaux, holding on to it fiercely to stop it slipping away. Beatrice is ironing a blouse for next morning, and I tease her about the care she takes with the wardrobe. She says seriously, "The secret is to buy well, Annie. Quality, not quantity." She is a secretary to two of the ministers at the GPOM. "It's all right for you, you're a student," she adds wistfully.
"When will you start your training, B?"
I ask her. I don't want her to feel I'm putting on airs because of going to the university. Beatrice's dream is to be a missionary. She avoids my gaze. "I don't know yet. I'll have to see. It depends."
"On what?"
She concentrates on the ruffles of her blouse, pressing the iron against each one with precision.
"Oh, you know, on my vocation, I suppose."
"Oh, I see." This is a part of her life into which I can never inquire.
"I thought you, well, you've got a vocation, haven't you? You've always had it."
"I don't know, Annie. It's more complicated than I used to think. You have to be called," she explains gently. "It's not up to you."
"Oh," I say, very much hoping no one will call me.
There's a short silence. She finishes the blouse and stands the iron on a trivet to cool.
"But listen, that's enough about me. What have you heard from home?"
"Oh, you know, nothing much. I'm still thinking about Beatrice and how annoying it must be to have to hang around waiting for God." I turn my mind to a question. "Nothing's happening at home, is it? Daddy's worshipful what's-it of the lodge by now, I suppose. Golly, I hope that doesn't mean I'll get dragged off to ladies' evenings." I pull a face in mock horror.
"I say, do you suppose Mother has to go? I can't see it, can you? Imagine, she'd have the Bagshaw singing the old rugged cross within half an hour."
We both smile uneasily. "Anything to report on that front?" I ask after a moment.
"On Mother?
No. But Annie..." Beatrice has folded up the ironing board. She comes to sit down.
"They haven't mentioned Fred?"
I throw myself on the slippery counterpane of her bed, levering off my shoes without untying the laces.
"Fred? What about him?"
"He's not been well." I stare at her.
"How do you mean?"
Beatrice sighs. "Oh dear, listen, before we talk about it, let me make you some cocoa." I shake my head.
"I want to know about Fred. What's the matter with him? Is it serious?"
"Quite serious, but it's not..." She looks at me meaningfully. "Physical."
"You mean it's like last time?"
Beatrice nods.
"But worse.
Nervous exhaustion, they say."
"Where is he?"
Mappily.
"In? Or as an outpatient?"
"He's in there, Annie. He's been there a few weeks."
"And they never told me?"
We look at each other as I take this in. The hospital is a great brick lunatic asylum from my childhood. Girls at school who live nearby called it the building. They threatened to lock you up in it if you did something stupid.